Measuring yourself is easy in some respects, like your age, your height, your weight, but not so easy in others, like your character, integrity, and maturity. But those are the real measurements we should be focusing on. Your quantitative info doesn't define who you are, it's your qualitative info that does. But growth doesn't just happen. It takes intentional accountability on your part. So welcome to The Measuring Post, a place where we can learn and grow together.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Measuring Post. My name is Joe Massa, the host of The Measuring Post. And today I'm really excited for the topic we're going to cover because this is really something that's going to benefit me that's currently going on in my life. I'm about to be launching a brand new podcast network, which we're calling Podtopia Network, which I'll tell y'all about on a different time because that's not the focus of today's episode. But this lovely lady I'm going to speak with today is going to teach us all about how to maximize the efficiency of our business, how to hire the right people, how to sort of maximize the efficiency of the teams that we bring on and employees. She runs a company called LeaderShift. So please welcome to The Measuring Post, Mrs. Emily Hawkins. How are you today?
I am great. Oh my gosh, you have the best voice and intro. Like, oh my gosh. Awesome.
That was just off the top of my head. I always joke, I say it's a voice for radio and a face to match. You know, it took me a long time to actually want to be a video podcast, but I do appreciate that. So
I love
a lot of years in the industry, and that's really kind of what got me into this. But I love that I've transitioned into The Measuring Post and bringing people like you on because it really does teach me and our audience a lot of different skills. And, you know, the past guests that have been on have been phenomenal. And, you know, we've had several pre-interviews and we actually had to reschedule this like three or four times already. So I'm really excited to get you on because I love your company. I love what you guys do. And without really giving too much information, I want to let you explain it. Tell us all about LeaderShift and kind of, you know, what got you into this? I know you've worked with over like 2,500 clients. You got this great program. You were even featured in Forbes magazine back in 2020. So tell us how Emily Hawkins got to where she is today.
Oh my goodness. Well, humble beginnings is what we'll start with. And actually, I was a horrible leader. So I was potentially one of the worst leaders I've ever been across. Like, I just didn't know what I was doing. So when I was 30, I had the opportunity to become a manager. And this was when I was in the corporate world. And I just thought my mother led 500 people in, she was a C-suite person in her life and her career. And so I just thought this, like, I was somehow like ordained to be a leader. Cause you know, I didn't know all the things that she had gone through and all of those things. I just thought, well, yeah, it's like in my blood. So I'm just going to be good at this. There's a term for this. It's called unconsciously incompetent. And I was very unconsciously incompetent. So I started leading teams, like I said, in my 30s. And I thought that there was something wrong with everyone that I hired. I thought, oh my gosh, I am really bad at hiring people because nobody has the right work ethic. Nobody communicates the way I would want. They leave early. They come in late. Like, why is everybody like this? And I'm here to tell you that if you have that many data points, and I had quite a few because I started in this organization where when I was 30, I was a department of one, and we quickly grew to a department of about 25 people in three countries. And so if you're not a good leader, you can imagine how much havoc that can wreak. And so what happened was I kept blaming other people. There's a lot of things that happen when you blame other people. It feels good in the moments, like cocaine, like take a little hit and then you feel worse because you have no power. And I had a leader say to me once, well, if this keeps happening to you, the only common denominator is you. And, you know, it's a real hard thing to say to somebody, but wow, he was so spot on. Unfortunately, I didn't learn in that moment. I went on maternity leave with my second child around a few years after I became a manager. And I came back to just no one working, people coming late, coming in late, leaving early. I had a guy on my team that was running a t-shirt business from his cube. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. So I, one day, just in a fit of disgust, went into my office, shut the door, and pulled up a Word document and was like, I'm going to write what the dream employee is like. So I start writing, and the first thing I write is, they will never be late. And I start writing all these other never, like, they won't say this, they won't do this. And then I was like, this is a dream employee document. So I actually need to write what I want. So I deleted everything out, and I was like, oh, this is going to be harder than we think, than I thought it was going to be. So I started thinking about, what kind of conversations would we have? How would these people lighten my load? How would they inspire me to do better work? You know, how would our meetings go? Just all of these things. And I ended up filling up 2 pages, and I was so excited for about 2.5 seconds until I realized that if these people showed up, I wasn't the right person to lead them. And that's when everything changed for me. That's when it's everyone else's fault, it's everyone else's problem, all of it came crashing down, and it was like, I have to change how I'm doing this. And when I was in the process of this in 2015, I started the year with a goal of reading as many books as I could to figure out how to change everyone around me. That was the goal. That's not a good goal to have. But I read 26 different books. And by the way, all of those books, they each had nuggets in them for sure, but each of them said, you are in control. You are in control of the situation, and you have ownership in every situation. And I had to read 26 of them because, you know, it was like you read that and you're like, nah, that's not the answer I was looking for. So I read another one. It was like the culmination of those 26 books along with that situation of my team and sitting down and doing that exercise that it all kicked in. And that's when everything changed. I had the opportunity to fire someone on my team, put 2 different people on performance improvement plans. The rock star on my team left, and it opened up spots on my team. And guess who showed up? Those dream employees. I found those people, and I knew that things had to be different. So at this point, this was around December of 2015, January 2016, I decided after the Christmas holidays that I was going to come back and I was going to onboard this team. So I told you there's 25 people in 5 countries. So even knowing I had this new group of people coming in, I decided to pretend like the entire organization was starting from scratch. And so I onboarded everyone. I had everyone fly into Atlanta, and we met, we sat down, we talked about everybody's strengths and weaknesses, what everyone was accountable for, you know, what they were supposed to be doing every day. I had every department come visit this group of people and talk about what they loved seeing from my team, what great communication looked like, and what they hated and what they never wanted to see again. And it was so incredibly great. One of the guys on my team that, I don't know why he stuck with me for as long as he did, he said, this was amazing. I don't know why we didn't do this years ago, but I'm so glad that we started now. And that was it. Within about 90 days of that, our team became the most productive in the company. That very team of people told me that I needed to become a life coach, which I didn't think was a real job. But enough people said it that I decided to get a certification in life coaching, along with, I have an MBA in business. And that's why I thought that this was not real. And I got bored, because this was, my team was firing on all cylinders. Everything was running well. And I thought, what if I could show more people this? What if I could help? And I had this dream of helping 100 people really figure out, you know, what does work-life balance mean to them? What does living truly in fulfillment and joy on a daily basis? And so I left the company in April of 2017. Like you said, I was featured in Forbes in 2020, and I've helped over 2,500 people at this point. Business owners, really, I really love working with a business owner because we streamline processes, people, systems, and we do it all starting with that ownership piece, because I love what I do, because I'm not talking from, like, I'm not preaching. I'm talking from a place of cautionary tale, which I think is more relatable when you've experienced things like that. And at this point, I mainly work with home service businesses. So plumbers, roofers, electricians, HVAC companies, floor and tile companies, really helping them embrace leadership abilities and technology, because a lot of those businesses are amazing service providers and the other two facets are a little bit more foreign. And so I come in and help the owner really learn all those things and see. I always like to say that it's like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. I help them look down and see that they had the answers all along, right in front of them, and that they just had to see it. And that's just a little bit about me and what we do at LeaderShift.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really cool analogy, talking about the Dorothy Wizard of Oz, because you do usually have the skill sets within you, but it's something sometimes that can't be brought out unless you have that third party perspective to like really kind of just shine a light on it. Just like you were saying, some of the other leaders back in your original days of being a leader, they said, hey, the common denominator is you. So what are you going to do and what are you going to change about your own approach to leading, which obviously is probably a very humbling experience. Over my years, I've been an employee. I've also been a leader. I was a manager in a radio company, had 30 people under me. And it's a really tough thing to do, to be able to efficiently lead a team, but also you have to learn how to communicate with people in a way that they understand it. The way that I process information and the way that I tackle my tasks every day are much different than a lot of people. So I found when I was a leader of a team and I would expect people to do things the way that I did it, that was a failure. It set people up for failure because they're not me, and not that I'm better or worse than anybody. It's just I have a different approach. So when I kind of let the reins go a little bit and allowed them to bring their own style and their own sense of way of doing things, I found that we had much better communication. Things were more efficient. Obviously, you need to have that overarching structure and framework of the company and the team. But I think a lot of times, you know, we treat employees like infants, like we have to monitor their every coming and going. Mm-hmm. When did you take lunch? Did you get there at 8 a.m. exactly? And I really like a quote from Steve Jobs, the late great Steve Jobs of Apple, who said, I don't hire smart people to tell them what to do. I hire smart people so they can tell me what to do. And I really took that to heart at one point, because like if I'm bringing you on to be an expert in a category, like I should probably listen to you. And you're an adult, you're a grown up, you're a professional. I should trust that you'll get your job done. Easier said than done, for sure. You know, but I think that's what makes a great leader, is somebody that can trust their team and lead by example without sort of micromanaging, I guess is a good way of putting it. But, you know, again, it's tough. It's hard to humble yourself too in that position and say, maybe I don't have every single answer. And, you know, how can I learn from you guys as much as you're learning from me? So I think that's great to also, you know, take that sort of skill set and shine the light on it, like I said, to people that maybe already have those skills. They just didn't realize that that was within them.
100%. And I love that what you just said about, I thought the same thing. I thought, well, everybody works like I work. No, they don't. They absolutely don't. Their motivations are different. Their abilities are different. There's just so many things. And honestly, it's awesome because you end up with so many different viewpoints that if you're actually using that to your advantage, it's a huge innovative and creative advantage. I like to say that there's always got to be a little healthy tension on the team in terms of those ideas, like, oh, I wish we could do this different. You know, oh, this person is always kind of fighting a bit. And I'm like, yes, but we need that, because if we don't, then we lose our edge in terms of, if everybody's always agreeing, something is wrong. Something is absolutely wrong in the situation.
Yeah. Too many yes men and women definitely leads for upset issues and bad team dynamics. So you do need that person to sort of go against the grain and sort of also present like a different perspective, because maybe they see something that you're not seeing long term that can be beneficial. So that kind of gets me into, you know, leadership as a whole. What exactly are the three pillars that you kind of teach in your program, and what are the sort of dynamics of each?
So the first one is simplification. I just want to simplify everything. Most businesses have what I refer to as task shrapnel. And what I mean by task shrapnel is you have done something a certain way because you were the only one doing it, because maybe you built your business in 2015. And I don't know about you, but technology has changed quite a bit in 10 years. So some of the steps that you might have in there are there because they're left over from times that just don't make sense anymore. Sometimes people leave roles and they don't leave great instructions. And so we keep their tasks or whatever you want that we think they were doing. So one of the things I do is we really pare down and we simplify as much as possible. I like to say, can we do this in one step? Can we do it in two steps? I don't know about you, but I remember that show, Name That Tune, where it's like they give a clue and then they're like, I can name that tune in three notes. That's what I like to do is I say, how can we serve the customer exceptionally well without taxing the employee or systems behind it? Can we do it in one move, or do we need to do two new moves or three moves or something like that? And it really helps reduce down that task. So simplification is huge. One of the other things that I'm about is more communication. I have yet to work with a business who says that they have all the answers, that they know all the things. I will tell you that most of your employees don't know everything. They actually don't know pretty much anything that you're thinking about. And assumption is the root of all evil. So I just want to make sure that every business that I work with opens up communication and is actually communicating to their employees daily, weekly, monthly. And I don't actually mean fancy retreats. I don't mean anything where you're sitting down one-on-one, you know, every day. It's amazing how much you have in your brain that if you're just sharing it through Slack or you're sharing it through an email or you're jumping on a call. I hate meetings, so we reduce as many meetings as humanly possible, if possible. But sharing that communication of, hey, you just did a really great job, even that is so important. So really upping communication, simplifying roles, and then only that needle moving action. So simplified structure, needle moving action, and more communication. So the needle moving action and the simplified structure really go hand in hand because I want to simplify things as much as possible down to only those needle moving actions, like we were talking about before, and then name that tune. So those are really the three pillars. It's actually quite simple.
I have to mention Name That Tune because for about 16, 17 years, I ran a mobile DJ company, and one of the shows I used to host at local bars was Name That Tune. So that just struck a chord with me. I love that show and dynamic. But you're absolutely right. Simplifying is something that is extremely overlooked, and I have found that to be more efficient, first of all, automation too, you know, talking to the technology advances, these AI processes and ways that you can make computers that never sleep and don't need to be paid, you can make certain things automated and it's very efficient. So definitely look into some of those tools, but simplifying the process is definitely step number one. That's everything I do, I try to simplify it and make it as efficient as possible. And I always find, I love the shrapnel term because really, that's so true. There's so many times I go, we're doing six steps when it could be three. And like, why are we doing these extra things that, again, they don't move the needle. They're just time wasters. And do I really need to copy it here and then here and then here? Probably not. So why am I doing these extra things that are time consuming and taxing and they're not generating any sort of revenue? So coming up with like a clear map, roadmap of what you do, your processes, even using like mind map softwares, and there's free ones out there where you can sort of streamline your process and see each step in there, very valuable to do and really can eliminate a lot of that busy work that, again, is so horribly hated by every employee in the world and it doesn't benefit you. But one thing I've really noticed too, speaking of the technology is, and I'm very guilty of this, is getting stuck in this perpetual cycle of forever looking at new options of how to do something. The next piece of software, the next great thing, going down that rabbit hole. And I call it analysis paralysis, where, you know, I look at one software and then 5 hours later, I'm watching YouTube videos on something completely different that has mm-hmm. nothing to do with what I originally set out to do. So avoid going down that rabbit hole. And instead of trying to learn over and over and over again new softwares and technologies, mm-hmm. use what you already know how to do and just start. You'll iterate and you'll pivot along the way and see what works and what doesn't work. But you can't do that unless you actually start moving forward and making moves that benefit your business.
Well, and I love that you brought that up, because one of the things that I do when I first work with a company is, first, we have a session where we sit down and we map out their customer journey, soup to nuts. How are people finding you? How do they interact with you? Do they sign contracts? Do they just walk in the door and buy something? There's lots of different ways that people transact business. How do you follow up with them? You know, what's the entire journey? So I pepper them with questions. I create a document, just like you're saying. I love using Canva whiteboards for this. And we lay out the customer journey, and then we start finding the holes in it. And in this customer journey, by the way, one of the layers is always the systems that they're using. And what I have found, and this is what I always tell my customers, we are not going to find more software. The goal is to find out how the systems that you have work, because there's a good chance that you don't need anything else. You just need to fully embrace what you already have at your fingertips. And sometimes integrations are great, sometimes they're not. I will tell you, QuickBooks is great. I highly recommend QuickBooks. I have QuickBooks myself. I definitely recommend hiring bookkeepers. Like, I'm not poo-pooing any of this. What I am poo-pooing is always integrating whatever your CRM is with QuickBooks. That does not always make sense. It can actually cause more harm than good, because if you're working in an insurance industry where quotes are chronically changing, it's going to shoot every one of those over to QuickBooks and just jack it all up, for lack of a better term. If you're working in a business that's, you have an online store, you don't actually need every single sale record with the person's name and all of that inside of QuickBooks. It's just too much. It's going to overload and actually make your bookkeeper super expensive for you. So there are ways of not integrating things that simplify your business just as well as the integrations. But I always like to start with what people have, because 9 times out of 10, it's enough. And sometimes we're able to lower what they have in payments, because it's like, you bought the Rolls Royce, but you just need like the midpoint version. And it's great when you have a software like that, because it lets you flex and grow. And I love, you know, being in 2025, our ability that we have these days to really have softwares that 10 years ago, we just didn't have the ability. You'd have to be, you know, a Fortune 500 company to have access to some of these things that we have access to now. So it's such a great time. But knowing, you know, Kenny Rogers says it best, know when to hold them and know when to fold them. So.
Yeah, I love the song, by the way. I played that one on Name the Tune many years ago.
So, see? But I'm a huge music person too, so I love that.
Yeah, we'll do another episode where we just do music the whole time. But I think you hit the nail on the head there, and I actually worked with a company that was terrible at this. They would buy the premium version of every single software they got before, like just to test it. I go, why would you buy the year premium maximum subscription? And then 2 weeks later, you decide you don't like it, but you've already paid for it. And I go, you know, your tech stack is important when you're building a company and learning how your tools, and obviously you need to know what you're doing. So you know what softwares to get, how they work together. But a lot of times I've found that exact same thing. I don't need the biggest, baddest version of this software to accomplish what I want. I always recommend starting, first of all, if they have a free trial, do that. If they have a free version, start there and use it until you run out of sort of the functionality that you need. And when you need to go to that next tier, then make that decision. But I like what you said too about, we're not going to add more software. 99% of the time, I would imagine you want to eliminate some software, because a lot of times your software kind of overlaps. And yep. I find that, you know, I have all the Google suite and all the Microsoft suite. but they do the same thing. So why am I paying for both? Like, pick which one you like better or which one works with your other software better. Eliminate the other ones. If you need something back, you can bring it back. But instead of double paying and sort of double using software that you're instead of getting the full benefit of one piece of software, you're getting sort of, you know, a lesser value from each, then there's your first way to cut, you know, sort of overhead costs, but also inefficiency, I would imagine.
I had one business that had $30,000 of software they weren't using. I was like, why are we? It wasn't one software, by the way. It was about five that they had forgotten about. They didn't realize that they were paying for this because it was a monthly small little fee, right? Well, that adds up over time, five different softwares. And so I was like, would you like to make $30,000 additionally this year? Here you go. We're going to just get rid of this. And then it makes training people and onboarding people, all of that so much easier. So when you simplify, it actually rolls downhill and just simplifies all the things. So it's really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like I was saying, the company I was with previously, the same way, they had every subscription to everything. And then at the end of the year, they're go, man, we're just hemorrhaging money. Well, I'm like, well, you know, take a look at your bank balance. What is coming out repeatedly every month? Or, you know, did you forget you just bought a $5,000 yearly package that you used once and then now you threw it away for something new? So be very cautious of doing that and always start with the free tier and see if it's even worth investing in. So with that in mind, now I would love to hear a little bit about leadership success stories. Tell me some of the people you've worked with, and is there anyone that stands out on what you've been able to do for them that really moved the needle for them and their business?
Oh my goodness, so many. So one in particular that I can think of that I've truly enjoyed this partnership. When I originally talked to this person, they were really hesitant if they even wanted to work with me. They, at the point that we started talking, they had a partnership, and the partner said, well, I know you're having this call with this operations expert, but you never follow through with anything anyway. So how is this going to be any different? And he shared that with me. And what I said to him was, okay, you know, if you truly believe that about yourself, then I definitely want you to say no, right? Because you truly believe that. What I don't want to have happen is that you let your partner make a decision that later on you are resentful of. And I don't want anybody making decisions for me. I want every decision to be my decision. I might ask people's opinions, but the decision holds with me. And at the end of the day, this is your business. And if you really think that us working together would help, then let's do it. But if not, then, you know, it's totally okay. And he said, well, dang it. Yeah, I do want to work with you actually, because I don't want to be resentful to this partner. And what happened, and I learned very quickly, was he was, the specific business owner, was hiding from making any sort of decisions that brought any friction into the business. Any employee improvement, he would just not address it. He would go hide in his office. And these are his words. I used to go hide in my office, is what he always tells me. I can't believe I did. I just used to hide in my office. And he said, I would, you know, go on social media, or I would buffer, you know, with alcohol or these other things. And what I have realized, he is not just a rare case. Most business owners look at their business as almost like a haunted house. And they're like, I don't want to go into that. I'm just going to leave it how it is, because I don't want to see what's in that bedroom. And so what I did was, I was like, I'll walk into this house with you, and let's see what's under the bed. Let's see what's in the closet. And all of a sudden, I taught him how to have hard conversations with this specific partner, with employees, and then also going down the rabbit hole of these systems that he didn't think he understood. And by the way, this man is super tech savvy. We didn't know that was hiding. I was like, wow, you know this really well, because I would teach him something and he's like, wait, could it also do? And I'm like, now you're getting it. So within a couple months of us working together, all of a sudden he owns a car dealership and auto body shop. within a few months of us working together, he found money that was being spent erroneously. He was able to let go of several people that really weren't serving the business and bring in the right people at a cheaper rate. He was able to extend his services and actually offer different plans for different people, increasing how much money they were making on a monthly basis. And he now actually spends a lot of time in Florida. He doesn't live in Florida, but he spends a lot of time in Florida with his wife. They're planning on retiring there in a few years. And he golfs every week. So I'm mentioning those two things because a lot of entrepreneurs are like, I'm an entrepreneur. I can't have a personal life. And it makes me so excited that the businesses that I work with not only become more profitable, their teams work more like respectfully and just all, you know, they're so much better equipped to do things and trust is built. But then the owner actually has time to have a life. And that to me is truly special. So this business increased their revenue, increased their productivity, and decreased the amount of time that the owner was spending in the office. And that just makes me so incredibly happy.
Yeah, it's a great story. And I think that's a really true statement. As a self-employed person myself and owning businesses over the years, that's always sort of the original thought, like, I'm going to start my own business, be my own boss, I'll have all this free time. But then you don't realize, like, I'm the salesperson, I'm the bookkeeper, I'm the guy doing the creative work, I'm the guy marketing. So it is like a never-ending, I never get time off sort of job. Even when I'm on vacation, the phone is ringing, I got to answer my emails because my next check is not guaranteed. So when you streamline and simplify your business, it's so powerful because it does, it gives you your time back. Like, we all want to make money, but I also want to make time. Like, I can't take my money with me. My money doesn't make me better. I want my time to be valuable. So that's important. But I think you said something I really want to hit back on, talking about sort of that avoidance. The guy would go to his office and hide out, you know, for many years. And I still hold a license. I'm a mortgage broker as well. I've done for many years. It's a family business. And, you know, I've been going back and forth between mortgages and media for 20 plus years, but going through people's finances, I find the same thing. Like, people are really weird about wanting to look at what they're spending money on. And I'm like, you know, it goes, I can't afford a house. I go, okay, let's actually look at your, what you're spending your money on. Oh no, I don't want to, like, I know it's terrifying, but if you look at yourself and see what you're doing, I go, dude, you're spending $1,000 a month in subscription. Same thing. Like, all those softwares, are you even using any of these? I didn't even know I was spending money on those. Okay. You're also spending $800 a month on Starbucks. Okay. So that's $1,800 a month right there. That's a mortgage payment in a lot of markets. Like, you can afford more than you think. You're just unwilling to kind of turn the microscope on yourself and look at what you're doing. So sometimes it does require that third person or third party to come in and go, okay, stop, let's look at what we're doing. And then you can really lift the veil off of it and see, okay, this isn't as scary as I thought. A few simple tweaks can get you where you want to be. So, you know, don't be afraid to really not avoid the fires that are going on in your personal life, because a lot of times it's self-induced problems and they're easily fixed. So definitely make sure.
Here's something that I want to talk about really quickly. Why people don't do this, why people don't look at their finances, why they don't want to have those hard conversations, why they hide out. There's just something called a secondary gain. So you and I look at this and we're like, dude can't buy a house. Okay, that's terrible. But why? Because there's a secondary gain with him not looking at his finances. And this is the little thing that's sort of in the background. And I will tell you, the secondary gain is, if I don't know what's going on, then I don't have to change. And so even knowing up front and out loud, we're saying to people, oh, my business is falling apart and I wish I could buy a house. I am getting a secondary gain from staying in that spot because I don't have to change. Or there's a fear of rejection, a fear of, you know, I'm worried that everybody's going to hate me if I do this. So I'm just going to stay small so that no one ever actually hates me. So there's a lot of secondary gains that happen. And one of the things I do, and this is why I'm really glad that I have not only the business acumen, but the life coaching, is that it's all related. Your business is only as healthy as you are personally and mentally and physically. So if you are completely out of shape and you yell at your wife every day, I can almost guarantee that you have a terrible business. And if you don't, it's going to be, because you cannot be one way in your personal life and another way at work. It does not work that way. And if you are this person, it will fall apart eventually. I find that when I see someone who's truly healthy in their personal life, usually their business is pretty darn healthy. So I look for all of these little red flags, and we peel back the onion to say, did this start in childhood? Did this start with a bad boss that you had? Did this start with a bad marriage that you had? There are so many reasons why these types of behaviors start, and it's not as cut and dry as, gosh, when I started doing this, I thought it was just like, I'm just going to put some systems in place and everybody's going to be happy. But if that were the case, then if you've ever seen an episode of Hoarders, you can clean somebody's house out. But if you don't address mentally what's going on with that person, you'll come back in 6 months and it'll look exactly the same. I never want the businesses that I work with for me to put some things in place and then it's in shambles in 6 months. That's not what I do. We put lasting, sustainable change, but that only happens if the owner is willing to admit that they've maybe not done some things well and change themselves.
I love the Hoarders analogy. First of all, I love the show because it's very eye-opening, and it's sad. It's tragic to see people go through that. But it's exactly spot on. Like, if you don't address the root cause, you can't always just address symptoms and expect things to get better. You have to go deeper and figure out what's going on. So with that, tell me a few of the common pitfalls you see with small businesses and really advice for how they can, you know, just that first step. What's the common issues you mainly see, and what's a small piece of advice to get the ball rolling in the right direction?
So most of them are living in reactionary mode. So phones ringing off the hook, every single task they are somehow having to be involved in. Everything is a fire. So the business is on fire. Everything is an emergency. These people are living in fight or flight basically all the time. So the first thing we have to do is remove that. It's like trying to get on a moving bus. So I'm not like, okay, we're going to take a week and we're just going to chill. And, you know, no, I'm fully aware of what we're up against. And so I start removing excuses. Okay, so your phone's ringing off the hook. Let's tap somebody on your team that can answer the phone for you. You don't have someone, let's hire an answering service. There's lots of them that can do it for you. You can do it really cheaply. We can find you somebody in the Philippines to answer your phone. We can set up a voicemail. There are so many ways to mitigate, like, whatever the first thing is, right? And it might not be the phones. This actually happened with a roofing company that I worked with, where they were like, the phone is constantly ringing. And so that's what we did. We found a phone answering service, and literally the roofer tells me almost weekly that it was like the best thing that ever happened to him. He's like, I had no idea how much stress that was putting on me with the phone just constantly ringing. We've got to find that first big rock. Because once we remove it, what starts happening is they're like, oh, it's getting real. Like, all of a sudden, all of this reactionary work is going away. And then, like I said, we start stripping away and we find out what the root cause is. Because it's not what's really in front of us. The root cause is worthiness issues. It's, well, I wanted this to be bigger than it was, so I just kept buying things, you know, hoping that, you know, this would work better. They're not great managers, right? They have the right people, but they're not training them. So if you are the crux of every single thing that's happening in the business, then you need a better onboarding sequence. You need a better job description for your team, onboarding, and performance metrics. And so if that's the biggest rock, then we will start there. Like, oh, everybody's in and out of your office all day? Okay. We're going to redefine roles. We are going to effectively onboard everyone, basically have them look over the onboarding plan that we are going to build. I build them for them. They spot check them. And then you're going to go over that and say, is this what you do every day? And 9 times out of 10, when we do this, people are like, wait, but this is erroneously on the list. I don't do this, this, or this. Bingo, that's a problem. It is your job and you're not doing it. So let's get some training and understanding around that. Also giving people performance metrics, meaning good, better, best. Good is you are performing at the level of this job. Like the job description, you are checking the boxes. Nothing great's happening, but you are completing your job. That's good. Better is you're completing these and you're doing just a bit extra. Depends on what the role is, but you're going slightly above and beyond. Best is you're going above and beyond. You're thinking 2 to 3 steps ahead, but you're also training someone, teaching other people on the team, helping other people out. If you want a raise, you want to be best. If you're not best, don't come at me with a raise. So it shuts down a lot of those conversations and it helps people self-coach because they're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that this is what the boss wanted of me. So it helps level set expectations. And pretty much every business owner I've worked with cries with me at some point. I make people cry. Gosh, I sound like Simon Cowell or something. But in a good way, because it's either tears of joy, like I had no idea that my life could be this great, or wow, you really touched on something that I never knew was tied to this. So it's really awesome to see.
I just picture you with a British accent now going, what the hell was that? Like Simon Cowling somebody. So, but you're right. You know, sometimes you got to have those tough conversations and you have to look at what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. And onboarding, I swear, is the most important thing. And I'm trying to be really efficient at that because I like what you said. Have a very clearly defined expectation. And mm-hmm. if I write that up front and I know what I'm expecting of you, how can mm-hmm. how can I expect you to do what I want without even myself knowing? So be very clear about the role and what you expect as a manager, a leader, as a business owner, because mm-hmm. first of all, that keeps everyone in their lane, right? Mm-hmm. So I know what I need to focus on. I need to bring in new business to generate, you know, revenue, and I need you to focus on your tasks and do what you're supposed to do. And hopefully at that better and best level. So we're all making better money. Everyone's getting their raises on time and, you know, mm-hmm. the wheels are greased and rolling smoothly. So I like that. And really it's important for the leader as much as it is for the employee, because I've had both sides of that coin when not only was I not the leader, I was coming in as the low man on the totem pole and I had no idea what I was doing because no one explained it. So it was just like chicken without a head running around trying to figure out what the heck to do. Mm-hmm. And it was something that could have easily been avoided if somebody outlined my role. And, you know, so I've seen both sides of that, and easier said than done, but really worth doing the legwork up front to eliminate a lot of the fires and headaches you'll get later on down the road.
Oh my gosh, so much. And if somebody's underperforming, how have you not communicated properly to them? And I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt. Something that kills more businesses is assumption. Assuming the worst in people. We never assume the best, right? We're always like, that person's out to get me, or like, they don't care. And maybe their dog died. Like maybe their grandmother passed away. Maybe one of their children is having trouble in school and they're just worried about it and they're distracted. You don't know until you actually have the conversation with people. One of the business owners that I worked with when we were going through the exercise of really looking at the job descriptions and really focusing on what is it that people are doing, she said, well, I need to have a conversation with this one person on my team. And I know she's going to tell me she needs more money. And I was like, why do you say that? And she was like, well, you know, she has a child that needs after school care. And I was like, well, that's like every kid. Like you just described every child, right? So I was like, that doesn't compute to me. Why don't you go over the job description with them, talk about areas that they need support? How could you best support them? Leave it open. So she has this conversation. This woman that she had the conversation with absolutely never brought up money, actually said she was grateful for her job, loved what she was doing, felt very well paid, brought it up herself, right? And she said, you know what I really need support in is learning these 3 tools. And so I was like, oh, she wants your time, not your money. And so all of a sudden, this woman was like, I just really was about to throw money at something that wouldn't have solved the problem. And I said, exactly. So aren't you glad that you had the conversation? You've opened the dialogue. You're teaching her these tools. She feels supported and you have more money in your business. So,
yeah. And I think that's another important takeaway from that is also sometimes we get really sort of leery of having like a phone conversation or a one-on-one in person. And mm-hmm. we'll go ahead and default to like an email or a text or a Slack message. Sometimes you really get the point across more efficiently if you're doing it like this. Like, let me hear your voice. Let's actually talk. Then there's no misunderstanding. Like, you can't always decipher somebody's emotions or intention through text or through email because you can't read emotions through black and white letters on a screen. So pick up a phone every once in a while and have this personal touch, and you will get to the bottom of things quicker. You'll get results more fast. More quickly, and it's really the best way to do it. And I know nobody likes that. Everyone, we're spoiled with the I'll just text you, you know. And it's so much more efficient to just have a quick, let's hop on a phone call real quick. And I think you definitely accomplish more that way. So a little more old school, but
but it's so true because I don't know about you, but you should not have a hard conversation like you said over text, over email, or a Slack message. That is poor form is what that is, because you're right. You don't know how people are reading that. You don't know how they're taking it. You pick up the phone or you get on a Zoom or a Huddle if you have Slack, and you look that person in the eye and you say the uncomfortable thing because now they see the sincerity. They see the curiosity, because that's typically what it is, right? Like, so last week you did this thing and I just wanted to know why. You know, can you share more with me about this task that I asked you to do that wasn't completed on time? Just curious, what happened there, right? That comes across so much differently in person than if I type that up and it could come across like flippant or rude or who knows what. So yeah, it really does show you care.
Yeah, 100%. So with that in mind, I got two quick fire questions I wanted to ask you because you're helping small businesses and entrepreneurs to that next level. And one of my goals for 2025 is to read more books. I'm an avid reader. I like reading. And I like reading self-help and self-development. Not really help, but I like to think of self-development. That's what this show is all about. So what is one book that you think every business owner should read? And then what is one daily habit that helps you stay focused?
Every business owner needs to read the book Built to Sell. And I wish off the top of my head I knew who wrote it. But if you're listening to this, Google it or go on Amazon, Built to Sell. It's so good. It's a little story. It's made up. I think those are allegories. I think an allegory is with a...
Yes.
I think that's
John Warlow. John Warlow. I'll put the link up to it.
Yes. So what they do is they teach you how to sell your business. Now, not a single person that's listening to this wants to sell their business. That's not true. Maybe somebody does. But we should all operate our businesses as if we want to sell them, because what this book helps you understand is how to streamline your processes, your people, so that you can effortlessly go on vacation, take time off, not be the one that's beholden to everyone. So if you can't afford services like myself, this is the next best thing. In fact, I usually recommend it as reading for my clients because it's a great complement to what we do together.
Awesome. And what's one daily habit that you employ personally that keeps you focused on being the best version of yourself?
Every single morning I get up and I write in my gratitude journal. I used to hear people say that they did this and I would roll my eyes. What a bunch of baloney. Why would anybody do that? Here's something interesting about your brain. You can train your brain to focus on anything that you want. So for the next day, if you said, I want to see red bugs everywhere I go, you will see red bugs everywhere you go. Volkswagen bugs is what I'm mainly saying, or ladybugs, who knows? You can pick whatever you want. I choose to see gratitude. So I really focus on every morning, what happened in the last 24 hours that was so great. It can be anything. It can be great. It can be small. But what happens is I've trained my brain after doing this for many years to find the good. I will literally have a conversation. I mean, I have a feeling that this conversation will be in tomorrow's, because we actually had it. I'm so proud of us. but it's like I'm really focused on what great things happened. Because then if I'm focused on that, then I see more and more great things and I focus more on that. So I really love starting my day with that.
I love that. And you're 100% accurate. You find what you're looking for. You know, it's like putting those negative vibes out, you're going to get negative. If you put positive, ideally you get positive. So yeah, be very cautious of what you're focusing your energy and attention on. I think that's, you know, an awesome lesson to learn no matter what you're doing with business or personal life or, you know, relationships. It's all valuable that way. So Emily, how can people find you and LeaderShift? Now I already know the answer, but I'll let you tell us. Where can we find you online and how can people book your time and join up with your program?
So thank you so much for asking me. If you go to Emily Hawkins, the number four, the letter U.com, that is my website. You can also find me on every single platform. I say every single platform. I'm mainly on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. At Emily Hawkins, the number four, the letter U. And by the way, if you're wondering why I have the number four and the letter U, it's because there are lots of Emily Hawkinses that own other websites that took all the other ones. And so I tried to be cute and now I'm just confusing. So, but Emily Hawkins, the number four, the letter U.com. If you go to that website, scroll down the page, there are three different things that I want to give you. One is you can book time with me, of course, on that site. Another one is you can take an assessment to see which type of leader you are. What I think is really fun about this is that there is no wrong choice. So you're not going to get to one that's like, oh my God, you're the serial killer leader and you should not be leading people. That's not a type, by the way. everyone has something that they are doing that's wonderful and something that they're doing that is less than wonderful, including myself. I'm not sitting here like I'm some great leader. I still am definitely a work in progress. But what this does is it allows you to see that. And then it gives you a checklist of things that you can do with your team. If you're a party of one, different things you can do in your business to actually overcome it, your limitations, and actually amplify the things that are great. If you have a team, I recommend reading both to them, your good and bad, and letting them support you in mitigating those things. It's a great conversation starter. And then the other item is if you're not sure what to focus on first in your business, because there's people, there's processes, there's systems, there's all these different things. What do I do first? What would have the biggest bang from the buck in my specific business? Well, I have a quiz as well that you can take that quickly assesses all of the facets of your business and says, here is where you should focus first. And here are the three things that you can change this week that will increase productivity in that area, which actually ends up affecting all the other areas in your business. And it will decrease your time that you're spending as well.
Yeah, I like all that. And I'm definitely going to be looking into this myself. But again, I'll put the links around this video when we release it. That's Emily Hawkins for you. LeaderShift.com. So definitely check out the site and LeaderShift and what they offer. I'm going to check out that book also, Built to Sell. I'm interested to read that one. I'll add that to my collective list. And yeah, Emily, I really appreciate your time today. Learning about what you do, I think, is so important. And as a business owner, and as I mentioned, I'm launching a brand new business this year right now. Currently, Wheels Are in Motion. I would love to employ some of your time and just, you know, have you do a quick audit of what I'm doing. And obviously, I like what you said too. You're still a work in progress. We're always works in progress. We never get to fully ascend to that level of greatness that we shouldn't continue to grow. And that's what this show is about. I think that's what your company is about. And that's why I really wanted to bring you on today. So I'm so thankful that we finally got to get this on the calendars. And we tried doing this over a month ago and I lost my voice. And then we had family problems and then, you know, holidays. So really, really grateful to get you on. And everything you said today was outstanding. So thank you so much for coming on The Measuring Post. And with that, is there any sort of final little tidbits of knowledge you'd like to share with the audience?
Well, Joe, the feeling is mutual. I'm so glad that we finally got this to work. Thank you for having me. And I just want any business owner to know that whatever business you have, the way you serve is your unique gift. And we need you. We need you in this world. And if you need help in or other areas of your business, it doesn't mean something's wrong. It means that you're doing it right. So if you need someone like me, you can follow me on social media completely for free. I give tips every day in my stories on Instagram and Facebook. But just know there's something unique about you that this world needs. and your business is incredibly important to your community and to all of us. So thank you for being an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. And also, like you said, don't be afraid to look for help in ways to grow yourself, because not everyone has it figured out. In fact, nobody has it all figured out. So use the resources that are being presented and be the best version of yourself, the best leader you can, and grow each and every day. And you can continue doing that by also tuning into The Measuring Post, because of course, this is a place to learn and grow together. So once again, thank you, Emily Hawkins, for your time today. And I can't wait to grow with you moving forward into 2025.
Thank you.